Let the trip!
You are listening to What the Truck! Are you ready to truck it? Are you ready to go back to the moon? We're talking to NASA today about the Artemis program, and hey, what may go wrong during a mission? I'm Dooner, and that's the dude, Michael Vincent.
Hey, you know what? Hey, good Friday afternoon, everyone.
Are you one of those guys who's always looking around for the exits?
Let's just say I like to be aware of my surroundings.
Well, if you're 50 miles above the Earth, strapped to a rocket, the last thing you want to do is be looking for the exits, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes you do happen. So what's the logistics of what happens when space goes wrong, when a mission goes wrong? We have a couple great gentlemen from NASA will be joining us a little later today in the programming, telling us all about Orion, the Artemis mission, and how the abort launch system works. So if something goes wrong, well, that's strapped up there, the astronauts can escape, can jettison themselves, and land back down to Earth safely. We'll also find out if that works up in space, too.
Yeah. So this is post, like, the zip lines we saw with the last episode,
this
right?
is once you're in the air, something goes wrong.
This is not your zip lining down tank and jumping in that truck.
That's what it is. Gotcha. That's what it is. We've also got Quality Transport Company Senior Vice President Amanda Schuer. She's going to be on. She's sharing her story. She's third generation. She's going to talk about the influence her grandfather and her father had on her. She's also the recipient of Women in Trucking's Top Woman to Watch in 2020. We'll find out if her 2020 was all it was made out to be, if she was the top woman to watch. And she just came back from the TMC conference, so we'll get some information from the floor over there. And we've got another shortage on our hands as well, Michael Vincent.
We do.
This time, it's tires. We're going to find out if the wheels are coming off the supply chain with IMI Mid-Atlantic Territory Manager Bob Bortner. Before we get there, we got to get to the news. But before we get there, we got to tip the band. So autonomous trucks are coming with a huge potential windfall if you're ready to seize it. Start reengineering your supply chain for autonomy today. Contact Locomation at Tell 'em Dude.
Hey, go to locomation.ai for turnkey solutions immediately after the show.
Headlines. What do we got going on? Oh, he's back in the news. Say it ain't Mo, trucking fraudster, are taking advantage of the PPP rollout. And Arkansas Mo, who we covered, last year on this program?
Yeah, it was about a year. Well, yeah.
Was it? It's so hard to tell with what's going on in the years. Do you know that building, that awful hotel collapse? That was in June. And I could have sworn that was like last month.
That was June?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, like, we're like on this timeline now where there's like the pre-pandemic world and like the post-pandemic.
Yeah.
Losing track of all sorts of time. Well, either way, Clarissa Hawes reports, the emergency relief program was designed to help struggling small businesses stay afloat during the global pandemic more than a year ago. Federal investigators claim fraudsters, including the trucking-related business, took advantage of the U.S. Small Business Administration's chaotic launch to vie for billions in government-backed forgivable loans. Now, federal prosecutors are attempting to claw back up to $70 billion in fraudulent and ineligible pandemic relief loans obtained through this PPP program.
Yeah, exactly. A reality star and owner of trucking company is the latest to be sentenced in the Fed's effort to track down potential PPP loan fraud scammers. It is none other than Maurice Fain, a.k.a. Arkansas Mo, 38, of Dacula, Georgia. I want to say Dracula, Georgia, but it's Dacula, Georgia, who appeared on VH1's reality TV show Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. He was sentenced to more than 17 years in federal prison on September 14th related to the $3.7 million PPP loan he received for his defunct trucking company, Flame Trucking, and also funding his long-running Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, I think he got stuck with too much of that Lululemon inventory. He got like a bad print on the leggings.
Was it the banana print that did him in?
Well, if you guys remember, if you're a longtime listener, you remember when we covered this story. And around the time we were covering these PPP loans, we were talking about how the federal government said that if the loans were under $2 million, they wouldn't be looking into them. And we were like, wow, they're just opening the door for fraud to pour right in. And here it is. Feds say scammers receive $70 billion in these questionable PPP PPP loans. It said many of the PPP loans, they weren't even properly vetted. They lacked internal controls to prevent fraud in the haste to provide a lifeline to small businesses, according to the watchdog report they had released recently. To expedite the process, SBA lowered its guardrails or relaxed internal controls, which significantly increased the risk of program fraud, which the report said. And we told you the second we heard this, it was obvious.
Ready, shoot, aim.
Either way, Arkansas Mo got himself wrapped up in this imbroglio.
Yes, he did. And
what's going on? Regulators and legislators are after Amazon again, this time with AB 701 in California. It's got the governor's signature over there. They actually tried to recall this guy. It didn't work. John Kingston reports that California Governor Gavin Newsom, he has signed legislation known as AB 701 that targets quotas in the warehouse industry. The legislation was introduced by Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, who is also the author of the very controversial AB 5, which targets independent contractors in the state. In the same way that Uber, Lyft, and trucking were seen as the primary targets of AB 5, Amazon warehouses have always been seen as the primary target of AB 701.
Yeah, that's right. In a prepared statement regarding his signing of the legislation on Wednesday, Newsom said the law establishes new nation-leading transparency measures for companies to disclose production quota descriptions to their workers. Newsom said that the law will also prohibit the use of algorithms that disrupt basic worker rights such as rest periods, bathroom breaks, or compliance with health and safety laws.
Very futuristic. Now we're legislating against the algorithm. If you think about that, that's a really interesting sort of concept. And it's a relatively newer thing that we're hearing about. You hear it on the social media side, right? The algorithm is doing, who it's feeding, how that works with advertisers, and how your data is used. But now algorithms used internally and internal controls are also under fire. The Wild West may be changing a little bit on how data is managed and algorithms are deployed. Quotas are not banned under AB 701, but the law requires such things as open disclosures of any quotas that an employee is subject to and prohibits quotas from hindering an employee from being able to take legally mandated rest breaks and go to the bathroom and that kind of thing. So seems like a positive, maybe.
It seems realistic. I mean, how strictly they enforce it. So I think it's the inclusion of being able to sue or something like that that is really the crux of the issue here.
But a huge money week in supply chain and M&A. We heard about Convey and P44 earlier in the week. Well, Emerge has raised $130 million Series B to scale their digital freight marketplace. That's right. John Paul Hampstead reports Scottsdale, Arizona-based digital freight marketplace announced Thursday morning that it has closed $130 million Series B funding round by Nine Yards Capital, Tiger Global Management, and the Spruce House Partnership. Existing investors are New Road Capital Partners, and Graycroft also had participated in this round.
Yeah, Emerge's latest funding round brings the company's fundraising total to more than $150 million, Dooner. The new valuation was not disclosed, but in an interview with FreightWaves, company officials said that 2021 gross revenues will come in at approximately $200 million. The company expects to run about $4 billion in freight through its system this year, and they're looking to scale that to $15 billion through their system next year.
Apparently, they're trying to make an RFP that touches everybody. So they're trying to get all that data in their system and radically change the RFP process. Emerge's other founder and co-founder, Andrew Leto, says logistics is the hottest industry in the world right now, and we have one of the biggest opportunities in the industry in front of us. And if you've been watching some of these deals, I think it would be hard not to agree, and you're hearing all the conversations out there.
Oh yeah, there's tons of opportunity out there, and I think the trick is getting those that are going to stick.
Well, you know why everyone wants visibility right now and they want solutions? Because the supply chain is a mess. The wheels are falling off, and now we have Bob Bordner here, Mid-Atlantic Territory Manager for IMI, and he's going to talk to us about yet another shortage, and this time it's tires, Michael Vincent. Bob, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Can we ever catch a break? Can we catch a break in supply chain? We're not missing this, we're missing that, and you know, it's a real big challenge right now.
I agree, and it's with everything on every level of the people that I talk to and deal with. It's a crazy, crazy time in the trucking industry as well as the tire industry.
So, Bob, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do over at IMI.
Sure. So I've been with IMI for 7 years. We make solutions for the wheel end with the concentration on increasing tire mileage and fuel mileage. Prior to that, I spent 20 years in the alignment field, traveling around, diagnosing tire wear issues, shimmy and vibration complaints, and things like that And on a daily basis, I see our distributor partners, commercial tire dealers, as well as trucking fleets of all shapes and sizes.
So, Bob, let's talk about this tire shortage. Tell me there's chips in these tires. We can't make those into microchips.
No, it's kind of crazy, but tires really do grow on trees. Not necessarily on trees, but in trees. The trees are tapped and get the natural rubber out, just like you would maple syrup in a maple tree. That's how the rubber is extracted. So what happened was Malaysia and Thailand are two of the largest producers of natural rubber. When COVID hit, those crops, fields, whatever they call them, were shut down. And then even when they did open back up, the workers could not go across borders to get to either one of those areas to extract the rubber. On top of that, there was a leaf disease, which harmed quite a few of the trees. And as you guys well know, it was pretty much a snowball at the top. But the last part is the cargo containers across the globe are making it that much more difficult to get the tires where they need to go.
So this has to be costing people who are trying to acquire rubber and also then buy the actual tires that rubber makes more money. What kind of cost increases are you seeing due to what's going on?
Well, in May of 2021, rubber prices increased 70% year over year. And tires, every major tire manufacturer has had at least one, several of them, a couple of price increases this year and 2020. So, and it keeps going up. I just had some tires put on my car and I probably paid 25-30% more than I did a couple years ago. So the end isn't in sight. It's going to get worse before it gets better. That's for sure.
Wow. So Bob, I mean, the price is going up. It's going to cost a lot more. What are the implications here for trucking?
Well, tires, fuel and labor are your major costs, your three biggest costs. And with tire prices continuing to go up, fleets have to really figure out a way to maximize their tires, their assets. And it's a challenge. There's a lot of new things out to try and help with that. But prices are going up and there's really no end in sight. So the good fleets are really looking for ways to increase tire life and preserve the tire casings that they have. Retreading is a very viable option, but even that is getting more difficult to come by some of the rubber products involved with that.
So you said there's no end in sight. Does that mean that you're sort of predicting even more increases? And if I am an equipment manager with a fleet, should I be considering stockpiling tires now if I can find some available, or should I wait it out and do some of these tactics that you had just mentioned?
Good luck if you're trying to stockpile right now, because I recently spoke with a sales rep for one of the larger tire manufacturers in the country, and this individual is 4,000 tires back ordered, doesn't know when they're getting them. I will tell you this, there are some sizes that are available, but that doesn't help with somebody who's running a different size.
Yeah,
this particular person stopped selling the sizes they don't have and started selling 19.5 and wide base drives. That's all they can get their hands on.
Unbelievable. So, Bob, I suppose that this will have some issues with safety and crashes, right? I mean, people are going to push the limits on retreading, aren't they? You can only retread a casing so many times, right?
Eventually, you're using a Sharpie to put those lines on there. You know, you're putting the Sharpie lines in yourself.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to start using a different dime to measure the depth of the tread, right?
Yes, you're right. And there are a lot of Sharpie lines on a retread when it gets out of the chambers. But yes, there is only a certain amount of times that you can retread a tire. Some people will push it to the limit, and some of the fleets that would only say retread a tire two times, now they're looking to do it a couple of more times to save on the rubber costs. But, you know, safety could potentially be an issue, but I'll be frank with you, the retreaders that I deal with, that I see on a regular basis, do a tremendous job. And really, retreading has come so far from what it was years ago that I have the utmost confidence in the retreaders that I see regularly that they will be safe and do a good job.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, what's easier to find right now, a truck or the driver to drive the truck?
No.
Even. That's a great question. And
the driver
shortage is way out there. Basically, when COVID hit, some of the best drivers retired. They just didn't want to go through everything. Like you heard about, perhaps we were going to have a gas shortage in the summer here because tanker drivers that need a special CDL, those drivers just got out of it. So driver shortage has always been a big issue in the industry, as well as driver retention. But once again, it was a snowball effect. When COVID hit, the driving schools shut down. You can't train tractor trailer drivers over Zoom like we were all doing during those times. You have to be live and in person. But, you know, the fleets are now offering all different types of bonuses, incentives, and sign-ons. They're linking a lot of that to safety. But, yeah, getting either tires or drivers is very, very challenging right now.
It is. And what about the technicians? Is there a technician shortage as well?
Yes. So diesel technicians that work in the fleet shops, a lot of them are older. They're about the baby boomer generation. And, you know, in the next 5 years or so, the numbers are 40% of them are going to be retiring. But what's really important to that is the feeder programs coming in aren't really helping. You know, there's some vo-tech schools. There's some other avenues that these fleets are using, but there's just still really a shortage. And then when you actually go to the tire dealer location, the tire technicians, you know, let's face it, you know, you don't, being along the side of the road, replacing a flat tire, you know, at night, it isn't fun. And it's hard to fill these jobs even before this. I mean, several of the locations I go to, the managers of the locations are out in the shop changing tires right now because there's no one to do it. And they're trying everything they can to get workers to no avail.
I mean, that's yet another thing that sounds like a pretty big safety issue. You know, you have a shortage of people, you have people with less time, corners start getting cut. What is EqualFlex and how can that potentially help?
Sure. EqualFlex is an easy to use internal tire balance. You drop it in, it's a bag. As the vehicle goes down the road, it breaks open. It balances for the lifetime of the tire. What we're talking about here, where it goes hand in hand, is it increases tire mileage. And those assets now are extremely important. The more miles you can get out of any tires in your fleet, that's what you want to be doing. And then at a fleet level or the tire dealer level, if you are using a spin balancer, which takes away man hours, labor time, it can be a pain in the butt. You can just drop this bag in. It literally takes a second instead of 20 minutes or a half an hour. And the techs that you do have, you can have them focusing on money-making jobs and to keep the trucks up and running. And as you guys continue to point out, safety.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, sounds great to me. We are out of time, though. Where do people go to learn more information?
www.imiproducts.com. And then shout out on your Monday broadcast, you talked about the Penn State whiteout.
Yeah.
Go Nittany Lions.
All right. There you go. Cowbell for that, too.
All right, man.
Thank you, Bob. Have a great weekend and enjoy some college football.
Appreciate
it's gonna
time.
Be a, it's going to be a nice one.
Peace.
It's a little like fall down here in Chattanooga.
Oh,
I like
yeah.
It
feels
bit.
Great. I love
hey,
it.
Hey, so last week, he mentioned Monday's show, but last Friday's show, we kicked off our Bloodline series, right?
Yes, we did.
My dad was on there. We had a bunch of other great guests, and we were highlighting multi-generational families in freight. We'll also look at siblings and that kind of thing, too. But if you have blood that touches in freight, reach out to us. We want to highlight you. In the fall, we want to do a bunch of these different segments. And what it's done very well is the signal that it's put out to a lot of you out there, which you can reach out to me if you want to come on, tdooner@freightwaves.com, or find me on Twitter or LinkedIn. Easy to talk to sometimes. but Amanda over here, Amanda, our next guest, Amanda Schuer, she's Senior Vice President at Quality Transport Company. She had reached out and she told me this great story about how big of an influence her grandfather was on her. And I said, Amanda, you got a great background. You got to come on the show, share the story with us, tell us a little bit about what you're up to. And she's here right now to do just that. Amanda, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you? Good to be here.
Where are you? You're sitting in are you in a shipping container right now?
Yes, I am. No, this was my birthday present to myself. All this virtual world, it's like a wood paneled background. So, yeah.
I dig it. It's got some nice texture to it and all that kind of stuff.
It does look awesome.
So when you, so we were doing these bloodline things, tell us why you reached out and tell us a little bit about this story.
So my mission was to be the only grandfather, granddaughter bloodline on your show. And, you know, it's funny, like I went over to my dad's place yesterday to interview him and get a little bit more background on our family. But actually what I learned is that I am actually the fourth generation. So my great grandfather actually owned a trucking company too. So I dug a little bit more into my past yesterday.
We have a picture of you with, I believe that is your grandfather. If we can show that up on the screen right now. I think that's, I see the ACK, so I think he's driving a bulldog over there. I think he's got a Mac, but
it looks like it.
How much influence did your grandfather have on you? Did you used to do ride-alongs and that kind of thing with him?
Yeah, so that's my dad. And so that was taken, my grandfather owned a Mac dealership. And so actually the way it started is we had a trucking company, and then we also had a truck dealership. And so my grandpa actually split the company from the dealership. And so when I was a kid, I used to hang out at the dealership. And so that picture is from the dealership. And then my dad ruined it all and became a dentist. But my uncle, I know, right? I know. But my uncle was actually involved at the dealership before he passed away. And so, but then after that, there's like no one else, you know, to kind of go into trucking. And I fell into it like completely on a whim. So I was laid off from like a meeting planning agency, and there was a marketing position at a Kenworth dealership. And so that's how I fell into trucking.
That's interesting. I was going to ask, how did you, dentistry or trucking? It's a hard choice because at times they're
both like pulling teeth.
They're both like pulling teeth, right? Especially at times like now. It's exactly right.
I love it.
So tell us a little bit about. So then you get in the industry. What was that like first joining the industry in marketing? You had that experience with your grandfather, but did you know a lot about the business, or was it a little bit of trial by fire? Mm-hmm.
Totally trial by fire. It was nothing that I really knew much about, and like, I tell this story now that I went to college, obviously not with trucking in mind, but now there's like nowhere else I would be. And I learned pretty quickly that it was because of the people that I stay in trucking. And so when I started at the Kenworth dealership, I was working in corporate. And at the time they had a corporate building upstairs and then the dealership downstairs. And I kept making excuses to go downstairs and like, what's going on down there? You know, we got parts to deliver, you know, we got shops in the bay, and like the dealership was so much more exciting for me than corporate marketing. And so I worked at a couple large dealer groups, and then I actually sold aftermarket parts for 4 years and traveled and had a lot of trucking customers. And then I switched over to the fleet side in 2015. So yeah.
Awesome stuff. So obviously you made a great choice and your whim has paid off. Cause I mean, look at you now, the top women to watch award in 2020. Dude.
Yeah.
That's an amazing accomplishment. So you must be very proud of that, right?
I am. And you know, it's funny. I was thinking about like, so my grandpa passed in 2007, and I was thinking like, what's something that he would never believe. Right. And I'm a remote worker, and I like my grandpa's mind would explode. If I could tell him that I'm dispatching loads, you know, from Kansas City when my company is in Rockford, Illinois, and I'm really proud that I'm carrying on the family tradition of trucking. You know, I just wish he was here and then I could share that with him. But, I think it makes my dad proud, obviously, because, you know, he's doing the dentist thing, but, at least someone in the family gets to carry on the trucking torch.
No, it's funny you say that, because I talked to some like the old school guys in Boston back when I was in customs brokerage, and they would be like, you know, if you talked about remote work now, because back in the day, like one of the guys was telling me he used to take a typewriter down to the port, right? Down right by customs, because a lot of times things are entry docs required.
Sure.
He would sit by the payphone and he'd bring a typewriter to the port and he'd get the information and he'd write the entries right there. He'd type them out, then he'd bring them into customs to get stamped off. And if it was hot freight or hot loads or all that kind of thing.
That was his remote work.
So inefficient. And that was that version of remote work. I mean, this remote world has thrown us into a ton of virtual events, but you were able to get outside and get out in the field and go over to TMC 21 just recently. What was that all about?
2021 TMC was awesome. Just got back from Cleveland. Never thought I would be so excited to go to Cleveland in my life. But first trucking show, you know, back with everybody face to face. And, you know, I'm a huge proponent of TMC as an organization. You know, it's a really great group for those focused on technology and maintenance. And, you know, we create a lot of recommended practices for the industry, but it was great. We had a big trade show floor, got to see a lot of new technology, some really cool stuff, and got to see like my posse, my trucking posse, which is great. So yeah, a really great event.
That's awesome. So a little slam on my hometown, Cleveland there, a little backhand.
Yeah,
a little bit. That's all right. I don't go back much myself. But can you, hey, is there anything good in recruiting right now, Amanda? Oh, yeah. Can you share anything good there?
Our last guest, Bob, just told us we can't find drivers, you can't find technicians, you can't find wheels, you can't find anything.
You need rubber to even roll down the road.
I was like nodding my head when Bob was talking, and like, I'm like, wow, I have to follow his awesomeness, but it's tough right now. You know, I mean, so I think for my freight customers, it's hard for them to find the trucks, but then for me, it's hard to find the drivers. And, you know, I'm a small fleet. I only have 20 trucks, you know, on a good day. And so, you know, trying to figure out capacity right now. I mean, it is, you know, I always say that trucking changes every single day, but right now for me, it's like hour by hour, you know, and things that we thought were, you know, set in stone. Like we have a weekly, you know, freight pickup. It's Wednesday every single week, no matter what, you know, the last couple of weeks, it's been Thursday, it's been Monday, and like so much adapting. And, you know, trucking's always that way, but at a small fleet right now, you know, we're definitely feeling the squeeze.
We have something. You said you're afraid you might not look awesome. We have a video here. Let's roll this video and maybe Amanda can tell us what's going on here. Run the tape, please. Amanda, what are we looking at here?
So this is something that I'm so proud of. And again, like, I wish my grandpa could see this, but for the Truckload Carriers Association, they have a really great program called The Wall That Heals. You can see that right there. And this is my driver, Chris, who's a Marine Corps veteran, and he is hauling a 3/4 scale replica of the Vietnam Wall. And Quality Transport, our company, has been able to basically donate the driver and haul that wall. This is our third year. I mean, COVID kind of threw us out a year, but we actually got to haul it twice this year, which was really cool. I finally decided to invite myself out there this year and check it out. And it's amazing to see in person. They, in that motorcycle escort, they have the Vietnam veterans right at the front, and then they have the driver with the wall, and then a whole nother group of motorcycle escorts. And it's just an amazing thing. And we were so honored to be a part of it.
Now, Amanda, we love projects like that. So next time you have one coming up, let us know. We love covering those kind of things.
Absolutely.
We came across that on your LinkedIn, and we just had to share. You are new here, so I think we do have to send her to the wheel of stupid questions.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, can you please spin that? Thank you, sir. What do you got for her?
I can't see it. That's not fair.
He'll tell you what it says.
I'll just do what you're doing.
What is it?
You got dealer's choice there, my friend.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll ask this one. Now, what's the strangest experience you've ever had in an Uber?
In an Uber? Oh, man. Okay. I got one.
All right.
I was at a trucking convention and had a nice seafood dinner out, and a minivan comes up to pick me and like a couple vendors up. Get in the minivan, and the gentleman has his kids in the back. And it's like 11:30 at night. It's not like 7 o'clock. So the kids got their Kindle, and I'm like, I'm a mom, right? So what's going on? Like, why are you guys awake? But the gentleman, you know what? I respect his hustle. He said he's a single dad trying to make some money. And so the kids rode with us back to the hotel, and there it was. But I was not expecting a 3, 5, and 8-year-old in my Uber.
At least it wasn't my driver, last one I had, because it tells you have to wear a mask when you open the app up. So I have my mask up. And for some reason, the lady was like really offended that I would wear like a mask in her car. And when I got out, she told me to go buy my own car. And I was like, that's like the biggest diss you could maybe get from an Uber driver.
Wow.
Hey, Amanda, before we let you go, where do people go and connect with you and learn more information?
Probably probably LinkedIn is the best place to find me. My LinkedIn is kind of out of control, and I'm Twittering too at A Schuer. So either of those places. Love to always have conversations with other trucking.
All right. Well, Amanda, have a great weekend and don't be a stranger. We'll have you back on soon. But now we got to get inspired. We must go back to the moon. It's going to take a few things to get there, but let's check out this video.
Artemis has been woven into our culture. It has fostered collaboration across the aisles and across the ponds. It has grown beyond plans and preparations to include hardware and software. And now it has a heartbeat. You can feel the momentum. It is undeniable. We are going. And together, we will see Artemis light the way.
Our mission to the moon is no longer some far-fetched dream. This is reality. We are going.
This is the next step in evolution.
They're not just PowerPoint slides. They're actually metals being bent, shaped, formed to build the things that we're going to use.
This is real. This is going to happen. We're going.
We are going to the moon to learn how to live on other planets for the benefit of all.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
That made me want to run through a wall and jump into space. That's awesome. We've got we've got Nate Hickman and Nick Kindred with us, a couple kindred spirits from space that are going to tell us some down-to-earth things about Orion logistics and some things that, you know, maybe are not the most comfortable things to talk about sometimes. And it's what do you do when
something goes wrong right?
During a mission? Yeah. But before we get there, we'll start with Nate. Nate, how you doing today?
Make sure you can hear me.
Oh, we got you, man. Yeah, you were
got
on
it.
Mute.
There's a delay. Got it. Cool.
So how you doing, Nate?
Doing real good. I'm out here actually at Kennedy Space Center right now. I'm just down the street from where we put a lot of that stuff together you saw in that video, and that was pretty cool. And we wanted to come talk to you today about some of the stuff you saw.
Cool. So, like, what do you do on your day-to-day? I mean, you have a pretty, your job doesn't look very boring.
No. It's pretty good. So I'm the Element Operations Manager for NASA here at Kennedy Space Center. We work on the Orion launch abort system, which is the pointy end of the rocket. So on the stuff you just saw, the stuff that flies to the moon, the pointy end is actually the launch abort tower, where if there's a problem during launch, you mentioned earlier, that it will pull the capsule away from the rocket to keep the astronauts safe. So we're in process right now of actually building that or putting that together here, and we're almost done with it. We've been doing this for several months now. Yep, and there's the capsule. You can see what it looks like inside. We're getting ready to go to the next phase, which is we take it to the big building we have down here called the Vehicle Assembly Building, or the VAB. And then we're going to stack it on top of that big rocket that you're going to see. And we're going to send this one to the moon. It's going to do a figure eight and come home and start off our Artemis generation missions. So we're all looking forward to it.
Well, Nick, where do you fit into this equation?
Yeah.
Well, I'm actually Nate's counterpart. I'm his contractor counterpart. So we spend a lot of time together, working together, and we manage the crew down there right now that's putting the launch abort assembly together and putting on top the crew module. We manage day-to-day operations, do all the pre-planning. There's a lot of work that goes into assembling this piece together. So we have a good time doing it.
It's awesome stuff. I love hearing all the excitement in everybody's voice about this. We're bending metals. We're drilling screws. This is really happening. So, Nate, tell us about things were pretty exciting last week right around NASA with the Inspiration 4, yeah?
Oh, my gosh, that was pretty cool. So our building is right next to that launch pad where they were at.
Yeah.
So while we were putting our system together and working on it inside, we all kind of stole outside. We have this really cool spot up top where you can watch it. We watched the launch, and it was great. Man, that was one of the coolest launches I've seen. It did some really cool stuff up in the sky that you just never see, the way that when the thrusters fired and things. So, that's pretty inspiring for all of us. I'm hoping ours goes as well and looks as good, too.
Yours is Orion, and I believe that was like the capsule that people are used to seeing. I believe that was the Dragon capsule, and it was it the same one that was used about a year ago for our first mission to space in about a decade? I know SpaceX used a Dragon capsule for that as well.
It looks the same.
Yeah,
it's probably a different capsule. They change them up, but it looks exactly the same.
So what is the Orion capsule?
It's their standard crew stuff. Oh, the Orion one. Well, you showed some pictures of it already. So Orion is built by Lockheed Martin. It's not a SpaceX product. Us NASA, we work here to assemble it onto the rocket, which is a host of other contractors. It's a little bit bigger, and it's designed for long duration space missions. So it'll send people to the moon, not just into low Earth orbit. So it's bigger. It's got a bigger heat shield. It's got more stuff in it. And then you can see here, it's kind of just has a different purpose. Again, it's not really just to go to the space station or go into low Earth orbit. It goes further.
Yeah. So its purpose, though, is it to land eventually on the moon? Is that what the purpose of that capsule is, or what specifically is it used for?
Got you. No, this one doesn't. You'll need a lander eventually to go with it.
Yeah.
This is like the taxi that gets you there. Gotcha. So you got to have a place to stay. Everybody's seen on TV where, you know, you got the guys up in orbit in the capsule kind of hanging out. And then you have that lander that goes down to the surface. This is the part that stays up in the sky.
So, Nick, what would the launch abort system be then? What element of this ship is that?
Well, the launch abort system is only for the first stage phase of the rocket. So it's kind of a contingency for right off the launch abort pad. If we had a problem during countdown, it would boost it up away from the rocket and then land the astronauts safely out into the ocean. But it also goes all the way up through booster burn, up, you know, through the 8.5 minutes of burn. So it can provide any opportunity, anything that goes wrong with the first stage, it'll get it away from the rocket and then allow the astronauts to land safely. So after we get into space, it's done. The whole last abort system's done. It's gone.
So how do you, Nick? How do you test that abort system? How do you know that it's going to work?
Well, we actually did a test AA2. I think it was in 2019. Where we put it on a Peacekeeper missile, and we sent it up, and we actually tested it right off the coast here, and made sure everything works. And then after that, we know our design is basically good, so we assemble the thing together, and we do all our electrical checkout, make sure all our circuits are good, make sure the pyros are good, and that's kind of what we do with the whole thing. We just completed a test last week on the rocket. They called it a URRT, but what it was it actually was testing all the umbilicals coming off at T0, and it had some really cool video footage on that. But so that's what we do. We test everything on the ground. When we go fly, we just have faith in our, you know, in all our testing and our designs.
Now, I'm looking at this testing, and they're dropping this from, it doesn't look very far, right? It looks like 5 feet. So, you know, as a layman watching that, you might go, I mean, how would they know if it's going to work from a 5-foot drop into a little pool? But why does that work? How do you guys know that works, and what are you testing right there?
Well, that was actually just one small test, and I'm not sure what the test objective was there. It was probably had to do with the buoyancy and stuff, but we do all kinds of tests. This is just one little test that we've done. We've done drop tests. We do recovery tests. We have one coming up, a recovery test coming up with the military in about a month or so, where we'll practice retrieving. So there's just all kinds of tests that have little objectives to it. So it's a whole process.
Gotcha.
Nate actually has more experience with that, so he can probably tell you a little more about that.
Yeah, Nate, lay it on us. What are you doing there? I was watching the video and listening to it. There's 500 sensors in there. What are they looking for? Why 500 different sensors?
Oh my gosh, that's probably only a fraction of it. I think there's like millions overall in the vehicle.
Yeah.
So since it's crazy, since it's our first flight, they keep they call it telemetry. It's downlink data from the rocket that comes back, and they measure stuff. So it's temperature, pressure. They want to know how it works. I mean, this is the first time we've done this. So like Nick was mentioning, we have a lot of the tests, and that drop test you just saw, they were simulating when it finally is, and the parachutes are open and it splashes down into the water. That's why it's only about 5 feet, because it's about the same as if the parachutes were open and it hit the water. They had a bunch of sensors on that rig too. And then they look for, you know, how the heat shield impacts, what the structure does, how it moves. And they probably, I mean, I bet they had thousands on that thing you just saw. So you can imagine millions on the rocket itself. As it goes up, it sends all that data back to Earth, and we can catch all that. And then after we're done, like Nick had mentioned, we all go out to the prime recovery zone for Orion is in San Diego, California. It's just right at the coast. So we all have to relocate. There are some good pictures. You guys got good footage, by the way. I'm impressed. I got better stuff than I do right now. we all go out to California, and then we have to go out with the Navy. We work on a ship called an LPD with a partnership with the Navy. We do go out and we recover that capsule after it splashes into the water with a team of Navy divers, and we retrieve it onto the ship. We have to get it back to shore, do processing, and then we actually ship it back to Kennedy Space Center over land. And it takes about 10 days to do that. You can imagine all the permitting and challenges and route zones and things, because there's still a lot of nasty stuff on board this vehicle when we bring it home. So we got to keep it safe.
Yeah, I was watching the inspiration for the live stream, the splash. And by the way, these videos are on a lot of them are on NASA's YouTube channel. You get some great content over there. But NASA's media arm has been doing an awesome job and as a SpaceX live streaming these inspiration things. And I made my kids watch the launch and I made them watch the splashdown. But I learned something while watching the splashdown. They don't pull you out of it right away. You splash down and they're like, then it's like an hour. And they're like, it's going to be about an hour until we get them out and we start talking to anybody. So they were just sort of preparing the audience. How long can that... can that stay in the water? Like, what? Obviously, it wouldn't land if there was inclement weather. You probably wouldn't launch. But what if whatever was delaying a vessel from retrieval? How long can they stay in the water on that craft?
Yeah. So the spaceship will float for quite a while. I mean, it's a pressure vessel. It's not going to sink. It can flip around. And you know, if you hear them land, when they'll talk about a stage or on a mode one or mode two. Sorry, that's the wrong word. If it lands upside down or not. Normally, it lands right side up, like you saw. It'll float. They'll have the astronauts out within. You know, we have a constraint for that, a few hours. You know, we understand that, you know, if you run a long duration space flight, you want to get out. And kind of what you saw in SpaceX, the timing is the same. But remember, when you first splash down in space flight, there's a lot of these things on the vehicle called thrusters. And they have a lot of nasty chemicals they use to do that. So we got to make sure it's safe. So what you'll see is the team's getting close to it and these sniff checks and things. So on Artemis 1, it's going to sit for a couple hours before we go to it and get into it. Of course, there's no astronauts. But there is a lot of safety that goes into it before you go up there. That's what you were looking at, trying to prep. That's what they were telling you.
Yeah, gotcha. So when you use the abort system, when is it actually used? Are these sensors, is it automated, or is there somebody with a button and somebody walks in and says, hey, the door's open, and you hit the button, you go, I thought you said abort. How is it done, and when is it used?
Nick, you want to take a shot at that, or I can?
go ahead. Yeah, there's a couple. Okay, cool. There's a couple ways to do it, but go ahead, Nate.
You can build on it. We'll do that, right? Now, ours is cool because it's automatic. So imagine this, right? You're in the rocket. You're going uphill. Something happens. Yeah. The idea is the computer can respond faster than a person can. So in Apollo, they did have a button. That's no lie. They sat with their finger over the button, kind of like you just alluded to.
Yeah,
we're a little bit better shape now. We got faster computers now. So
yeah, you don't want somebody sneezing when they got their finger hovering over that.
No, sure. Imagine. Oops.
Well,
right. So now the computer will look at all those sensors and it'll make the decision for you in an abort. So it can happen faster and keep you safer than if you were relying on your finger to do it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't rely on just one message. There's checks and balances on all that. So.
Yeah, Nick, like what kind of conditions would have to be going wrong? Is it like the rocket itself was overheating or was it going to explode or wasn't at the right speed to actually get into space? Like what are some of the variables that can occur during one of these launches?
Well, I'm not a real expert on this part of it, but I can tell you there's all kinds of different logic that goes into it. I guess probably veering off track would probably be one of them. Some combination of engine failures type of thing. But probably veering off trajectory and not going to make it into orbit, that type of thing. But like I said, it's probably not my area of expertise. I don't know if Nate has any more on that. I'm more of a ground assembly kind of test kind of guy.
Sure.
Well, we try not to focus on the bad stuff, you know, but everybody's seen the negative shots. And imagine this system keep the astronauts safe from all that bad stuff we've seen in the past. So it'd be a heck of a ride. It's not a Disney ride. It'll be rough, but hopefully it keeps them safe and brings them back home. So
the most hazardous part is the cryogenics, the first stage. The hydrogen, oxygen combination. I mean, you know, anomalies in those systems, we can actually launch it right off the launch pad. You know, if we saw something going wrong during, ignition or something like that, we'd launch it right off the launch pad.
Do you guys talk to the astronauts at all about these? Obviously, they have to be trained in these safety systems and everything, but like, what are their impressions of Orion and what you guys are up to?
Well, I hope they trust us.
We
see them quite a bit.
Yeah, they trust the system. They're embedded in every process we do, every design we do. So they're not just walking up the rocket on launch day and stepping in and going. They're pretty embedded in it, and they trust the engineers. You know, all the engineering, all the people down here. We work every day with the back of our mind that people are going to be stepping on this thing. A lot of us, Nate and I both worked shuttle, and I've worked shuttle since '85, and I've been part of those accident investigations and have met some of the astronauts that died in some of those accidents. So it's, they know that we are very, very keyed into making sure that we take the utmost care into making sure that vehicle's ready to go. So I think in the most part, they trust.
Yeah. Well, I mean, watching those test videos, the all the little details that they go through to make sure the test is set up right. I was feeling that myself just watching, going, man, you would feel pretty darn safe. So what's next for Orion now, once you get the board system installation is complete?
Cool. Well, that one's pretty simple, actually. We get to take it up north. Kennedy Space Center is a north and a south kind of thing. We assemble it on the south side, and we stack it on the north end in that big vehicle assembly building that everybody has seen in the past. Just think of the Apollo rockets being stacked. It's the same idea. We get to put it on top of the SLS core stage, and then we get to integrate into that. And then there's a whole host of more checkouts they do. They roll to the launch pad. They fill it full of fuel and check, and then they bring it back, and we install payloads. That eventually launch it. So that is the next step, is actually putting the vehicle on the rocket itself. So we deliver we've had this thing in our control now for months, and it's kind of our baby. Now we go deliver it to the rocket and say, here, you know, like, take care of it. It's going to go on the top now.
So how do you, it's such a critical step and a critical stage. How do you guys know it's done? How do you go, okay, now we're ready for crewed missions? That obviously changes the stakes quite a bit. How do you like sign off and go, it's good, boys, jump on inside this capsule?
Well, there's, you know, for Artemis 1, we have a whole list of test objectives. And if those objectives are met, they'll be good to go. We have a couple other systems we have to add that Artemis 1 doesn't have, like the oxygen breathing system. We don't have it on Artemis 1. So we'll look at the flight data, and, you know, we don't expect any surprises. I'm sure there will be some, but as long as... as long as all the data comes back that the engines fired correctly, that they burned correctly, everything in space, all the systems worked in space, we'll be ready to go. We're probably, after this rocket's done, we'll be the whole launch system will be checked out. 90% of the crew module will be checked out. So it'll get a good test run.
Heck yeah.
So, Nate, will this be any different when it's actually there's an actual crew inside of it, or is this set up exactly like it would be so you can test that?
Yeah, there's some minor differences. Like Nick had just alluded to, for instance, it doesn't have oxygen in this flight because there's no people, things like that. But the safety systems that we're looking at today, they all look the same. They function the same. They did change a little bit for Artemis 1. Like here's a fun fact. Artemis 1, the launch abort tower you're looking at, actually can't abort through the whole regime of what it would do. It doesn't need to because there's no people involved. So AA2 that we talked about during one of those tests was where we actually tried all the systems at once. So what Artemis 2 gets is it's kind of a culmination of all the pieces we've tried so far. The full-on abort tower system, the life support systems that go on inside of it, all the pieces. But primarily on this one, the capsule look the same. The pieces all look the same. They all function the same. It's just those little nuances in the end that really are needed to support crew when they go around the moon.
Wow. Excellent. Hey, throw Nate to the wheel. Throw these gentlemen the wheel. Stupid questions. Their first time NASA guys. And I saw he was waiting for her Uber answer. Maybe they'll also tell us what their worst Uber ride is, or what their worst Orion space ride is. Imagine having like a terrible like astronaut with you on a space ride. or something.
Uber space, right?
Yeah. Well, that'll happen. Shut up about politics or something.
Uber space will happen sometime. It'll be Nate and Nick driving it too, probably. So let's go with Nate here. How many circus clowns can you fit inside that Orion capsule?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. No, you know, you can fit a lot of circus clowns in a small car. So I'm going to say 30.
Whoa, that's pretty good. I wasn't expecting that.
Wow, there's a lot of stuff.
You got to be a contortionist, but I think you could do it if we really smash them in there and get the hatch closed on them.
are these bigger now? Because like in Alabama over here, we have a space museum, and I was there with my kids, and they have the Saturn V like rocket thing, and you can go inside the capsule. And like these were built for people from a different generation and a different time. Like everything, like I'm 6'2", over 200 pounds. Like I do not fit in these capsules very, very well. There's not a ton of legroom. Have they gotten any bigger? I mean, it's space, man. You got to be kind of petite.
Yeah, is there business class?
No, they're still pretty small.
This one is bigger than Apollo, so.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Even
we're definitely not putting 30 full-size people in it, so.
Even like the Gulfstream they had there, like they had like their trailers that NASA used at the time, and they're like, they're just small. I mean, people were just like smaller back then.
It wasn't even that long ago.
Less
right?
hormones in the milk or something. I don't
Less
know.
Hormones in the milk is probably it.
Well, okay, so when does this go up for real? When are we targeting Artemis to go to the moon?
I'll let Nick take a shot at that one.
It's about the end of this year is when we're targeting it. Yeah. This is a first time launch. So, schedules kind of change a little bit because we learn new stuff every day, but Basically, the end of this year is what we're targeting.
Yep.
Wonderful.
Wow. You want to see it go. You got
all right.
It.
That'd be sweet, man.
Well, Godspeed to you, gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today and teaching us a little bit about what to do when things go wrong. We enjoyed it.
All right. Well, thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.
All right. So that's God, the thing. Like, good stuff. News, you're going up to space. Bad news, the rocket's about to explode. Let's go to a little good news, bad news.
Let's do it.
Bad news and good news.
Shh. Yeah, that's not what you want to happen. All right, good news. Long Beach has begun trials of extended hour cargo pickup. A lot of people have been yelling, hey, we need 24/7 at the port. So let's take a live look at what's going on at operations.
Hey, I'm right here with you.
Hey, that operations? That's here? Operations over there. Operations, that's right. He's trying to manage all the vessel traffic. You're like, there's 70 ships there.
Are those the, like the gantry crane operators? Is that what's happening?
Those are trying to manage the schedule. But look, you know, we talk about the port. We talk about the port, and there's I think we're down to 62 ships, so that's a good thing. But once you get all this stuff off the ship, right? Well, yeah. What happens? Well, what's happening right now let's take a look at this video. You're going to see all these trucks here bobtailed and lined up waiting to pick up these containers. And what they're waiting for is chassis, Michael Vincent, because you can't move a container without a chassis.
Yeah, so no, all these, they don't balance well on a fifth wheel.
They don't. And the thing about the Port of LA and the Port of Long Beach, and this always comes up during congestion. Usually it's not the extreme record-breaking congestion right now, but they, whenever there's congestion out there, there's always been problems with their chassis pool and the way that chassis are done. And everybody goes, hey, we should change it. And then is Peter Freeman here. I have a great quote for him about kind of what's really going on here. He goes, the terminal operators say they can't do anything because the warehouses don't work 24 hours. And the warehouses say they can't work 24 hours because the truckers won't do it. But if everybody continues to say they can't do anything unless someone else does something else, then nothing gets done.
Yeah.
I have to agree with him. I think it's good that they're trying 24/7. I don't know how efficient it'll be, but you at least got to start it. It can't be worse than what's currently going on.
Well, you would hope it wouldn't be worse than what's going on. But yeah, it's funny that they won't do it. Well, they won't do it. Well, they won't. Well, hopefully they get that worked out because we got to get this alleviated somehow. And just killing the economy doesn't seem like the right thing to do.
It doesn't.
Here's some bad news. Take a look at this video here. So what's going on here is this driver's going down here. He's on the street. He sees this semi on the right-hand side here that is broken down. So he's coming along, and his car pulls out in front of him, and he stops because it's apparently this car is not going to get out of the way.
Yeah.
And he just nails right into him. And I'm just describing this play-by-play for people not seeing this video, but that's pretty astounding. Hit him at about, I don't know, what was he doing? Well, he slowed down.
He wrecked this guy. I mean, he drove into a semi.
Drove right into a semi straight on. It happened at a toll park approximately 1 month ago. Broken down semi on the side there. The driver says that, you know, he's driving along, and this guy, he was taken to the hospital. There's no, he's bewildered. The guy smelled of alcohol, $10,000.
He was driving a Camry. He slams into him. The guy who did it, he said he smelled like wine. He had no registration. He's got no insurance.
No insurance,
all his life possessions were in his car, so I guess he was a bit of a hoarder. And he did $10,000 in damage. But what's the outcome here?
Well, the outcome, apparently nobody was seriously injured, so that's a good thing. Although he did smoke his head off of that, the windshield there. You can see his head bounce off of that.
Was he like smoking a cigarette, or was that like smoke from his body?
I don't know what it was, but
I don't know. A plume of smoke comes out his window. He's on that side of the car because this is in Australia.
Yeah, it's
as you
in
mentioned,
Australia,
that's
so
where
he's on the wrong side of the car. But
yeah,
boom. Yeah, he smokes that guy pretty good.
Oh wow, that's why. I guess because he was drunk, he would just didn't. I mean, you're not going to get through the semi. I just don't get it. I don't know what he's trying to do.
I don't think he obviously did not know the guy was there. There's no way. All right. There's no way.
Get sober, dude. Come to Jesus. Get sober.
Yeah, man.
Get sober. It's the best thing I did in my life. It'll be the best thing for you. All right, bad news. Supply chain dive reports. Toy. Okay, we talked about rubber, right? And resin and things coming from trees. Well, what about plastics, man, for toys?
Yeah.
Supply chain dive reports. Toy makers worry congestion will lead to holiday inventory troubles. What they usually report with the unusual. Why the usual? Why can't I talk right now? Either way, Los Angeles has increased traffic, cargo traffic, 30% in 2021 compared to the same time in 2020. And these comparisons aren't that odd now. Like earlier when we were talking March to March 2020, March 2021, we would be like, ah, that's not really good.
Yeah.
But now last year, you know, the buying and the spending and the excessive buying was up, the revenge spending. So here, but we're up 30% from that. And that was already a very elevated peak season, right? And as congestion grows, this is what Supply Chain Dive has said, as congestion grows, the time it takes to ship products from China to the U.S. increased by an average of 73 days in September. That's up 83% from pre-pandemic figures in September 2019, according to Freightos. And we had Brian Patrick Bork on here from Seco back in August. We were talking about, is Christmas ruined?
Yeah.
And in that show, we were talking about for your shipping timelines from overseas. Now people are talking about, is your Christmas ruined? Should you start shopping now? Well, that's what these toy makers are warning about. And they're warning about at the Port of L.A. because all the shippers are bringing in their toys through there. And they're just seeing them sitting out at water. Well, in this webinar that they did, more than 60% of manufacturers are reporting a resin shortage, according to that webinar and survey data from Alex Partners. The good news is, going to be hard to say, is a vice president of the Toy Association said during that same virtual press conference at the Port of Los Angeles that if people go out to those major retailers, they're going to see toys on the shelves now.
Right.
The caution is, how long will it last? So there's still the opportunity to get some of that Christmas shopping in early. So that's the good news. Now you got to go and take advantage of it. I've got a closet full of Legos already.
Well, there you go, man.
I've done most of my shopping.
You did it. Excellent job. Excellent job. And that's what most people need to do. Very, very crazy. So here's good news, man. I know you love these films as well. Yeah. They're filming a new Mission Impossible, right, over in England.
Yes.
And it looks like it's going to be awesome. We've got some realistic stuff here with the trucks, the locomotions flying off of into quarries and all this other kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
But bad news is it's a little bit too realistic. Coming out of Derby, the Derby Telegraph reports that the Mission Impossible carriage accidentally crashes into the railway bridge. It didn't fit underneath it. And here's the thing, Dooner. It was being escorted by a police escort, and they still led them underneath a bridge that was not high enough, and it got stuck underneath it. And what is this woman? Sarah Wyman, she took the picture of that crash there that you see over there, and she commented, "I just heard a crash, looked at the side of me, and bam, bloke from a recovery van came running down to see what was going on."
Is that the same train that they wrote? There was a stunt that there was a video going on Twitter.
So this is the bending and everything that you see on here right now is from they dropped it off the edge into a quarry.
Yeah.
But then, so they were taking that away. They removed it. It happened like 2 weeks ago. So none of that damage there was really from this thing being stuck underneath there. It didn't hit that bad. It was on the back of this truck when it got stuck.
Yeah.
And being escorted by police underneath this thing. Well, shut it down right in the middle of rush hour.
There's this thing in Boston called getting star-road. And every time when there's Alston Christmas and there's move-ins going on around September, all the college students, because so many people live in apartments.
Okay.
They live off campus in apartments. There's just a mess. People always take their vans and they get stuck on these bridges. It's called getting star-road. And you get can opened and stuff. And some of them actually from hitting star-road.
Yeah, it rips the top right off of it.
The top right off it. That Mission Impossible looks good, though. I've been a fan of the last three of them.
You can check out the video of that locomotive going over the edge, man. That thing is hauling.
Here's like deja vu. We could just like rerun this part of good news, bad news from a previous episode. Bad news. Costco is rationing toilet paper again and cleaning products. They're talking about it's not this time, though. It's not like panic buying. It's not that everyone's buying toilet paper at the same time.
Right.
It's that they're looking at their inventory forecast, Michael Vincent, and they are seeing that there's going to be disruptions. That's what their CFO is talking about.
Well, now there's going
to be price increases of pulp and paper goods. Some items are 4 to 8%. Plastic items, Ziploc bags, disposable bags, 5 to 11%. Not good. Costco has chartered some ships, though. Let's see if those will help. They're going to hold 800 to 1,000 containers. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Nass, and all our wonderful guests today. Find me on Twitter at Timothy Dooner. That's D-O-O-N-E-R. Find him at Vincent the Dude. Hey, tell him how to be this weekend.
Hey, peace and love. Spread it everywhere, my friends.